Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. And as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PactInc. That's PactInc. And PactInc is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics, with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. We have a new show. Now it's the Enigma Sep Hour, and it is streaming live every Friday at 10:30 p.m. right here on the Freedom Train Network. All you got to do is click on that says the Enigma Sep Hour, as well as the Enigma Sep Hour YouTube channel. So make sure you tune in every Friday at 10:30 for the live viewing, showing, playing, all that of the Enigma Sep Hour, where he goes in. It's a hip-hop show. We got hip-hop on the network, but he's going in. He's an MC and giving his take on hip-hop news, all those things that surround the hip-hop top 10 favorite artists. All those things, the regular debates. You know, you can call in to the Enigma Sep Hour, you know, the number 720-820-1343. Call in and chat with Enigma September. So that's how I go down. Pat.
What up?
Freestyle real quick. Go ahead. Since we got the Enigma Sep Hour, go ahead, bust a freestyle. Go ahead. Do that one. Do that when you did. There you go. Do that when you did that at Thanksgiving. Do that.
It was a freestyle. I can't remember it.
Oh. I thought it just mean you don't have to pay for it, but it's all good. Hey man, so tell them about the app, man. Are you on? Go ahead. Tell them about the app.
Oh yeah. We do have the app. It's on the Google Play Store for Android, and it's already been updated to include the Enigma Sep Hour. You know, and the app is basically your one-stop shop. You know, everything you want, all of the Freedom Train content, right to your phone. You know, all seven shows, as well as regular updates for anything else that might be going on in the Freedom Train world. It's all right there. So if you're a fan of the network, even if you're not a fan or you're just curious and you want to check it out later, you know, what better way to remind yourself to check it out later than download a tiny app right to your phone that's going to give you a reminder whenever new content is created. So. Yeah. Definitely check the app out in the Freedom Place or in the Google Play Store. We working on something for iPhone, but we ain't got y'all yet. But if you got an Android, again, it's a really, really tiny app. It's like 14 megabytes. But
it's so powerful.
You got all of the content right there at your fingertips. So the
it's
app,
so
you know, Google Play. Go to the Google Play Store, type in Freedom Train or Freedom Train Radio, you know, and you'll recognize the app when you see it. It has our trademark choo-choo train
over it.
So, yeah, go check that out.
Mama, I just want to do the ad libs while you talk like amigos, but there it is. Hey, but y'all also know social media, on Twitter, Freedom Train Net. Instagram, Freedom Train Network, YouTube, Freedom Train Network, Facebook, Freedom Train Network, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Freedom Train Network. What's the Radio Republic as well? That's the new one, correct?
Yeah, you can get us on Radio Republic. They're a brand new company, actually, that was started specifically to create income for podcasters that want to do it professionally. So, you know, we are a professional podcasting network, so obviously we have a profile there, and all of our shows can be found there as well. And there, even more so than everywhere else, we want you to come to our site and go through our channels. But, of course,
straight up,
if you have to go through, if you want to go through another network or another directory, because you know they have more than just pro-black shows and more than just our shows, Radio Republica, we get I'll go ahead and tell you, we get 2 cents for every listener we get. So,
right. And you donate.
Right. The more money we get, the more expansive we can make the network, the better the sound quality gets, the more we can do in terms of being able to help people out in the community. You know, everything ties in. So, obviously, of course, though, we want you listening to us on our website.
Yeah, www.freedomtrainradio.com, where it go down.
Our app.
Yeah. So, Freedom Train Radio app. So, we got you. Oh, yeah. And August, as you know, every August is our Mental Health Awareness Month. And this August, we are continuing the trend. So, the next time you hear us, next Wednesday, we will be in our mental health awareness mode, and we have an interview, a good interview. So that will be August 8th that you'll hear us. So we have a great interview with Dr. Jackson Lohman. So she has a long career in working in black psychology. So we're gonna get that black psychology angle with that. So that's gonna be the interview that kick off our shows, as far as our shows being dedicated to mental health awareness. But we'll also have a lot of information that we're putting out throughout the month dedicated toward mental health awareness within the black community, to make sure that we are taking our mental health more serious and, you know, take care of ourselves. Like you say, mental health care is self-care. It's self-love. So got to make sure we do that. So make sure y'all stay tuned. www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that right back.
Power to the people.
To the people.
Wrong spot.
Yeah, I know. It's all good, man. I mean, you know, you read it, but you just backwards, but you read it.
What we got today for the social discussion? Go ahead, lead us into it.
And so we want to talk about things that happened within the last week that we found interesting. We want to be able to talk about and see how it relates to our community. And a lot, basically all of it does, especially implications and things. So, we know R. Kelly, Patrick's favorite R&B singer. You know, I talk about Bobby Brown all the time. My dog got a movie coming out, too, on BET, so shout out to Bobby Brown. But R. Kelly put out a song called I Admit. That's a 19-minute song. And I guess he figured that if he put the song out, we'd start asking him if he liked little girls, little teenage girls. But nope, we won't. So we're going to talk about that. Also, we're going to talk about Charlamagne Tha God, the radio host of The Breakfast Club and The Brilliant Idiots, and his sexual assault allegations, but more of fuckboyness. You know, Charlamagne is officially a member of the National Football Association of America. So we're going to talk about that. We'll get into this Oakland stabbing death with Nia Wilson. Talk about the white dude and just, you know, the open killing of black people that's been happening lately. And, you know, black people, we got to get real about what's going on. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to go more into that. The massive grave in Texas found that's connected to the convict leasing program was over like 95 bodies, I think, was found in a mass grave that they found in Texas. So we're going to use some information about that. And the white boy Brock Turner, he is getting a sexual assault appeal. His lawyer said he intended outer course, not intercourse, on a drunk girl who passed out. So we gonna cuss them crackers out. Yeah.
What,
so you ready, Pat?
Hell is outer course?
Hey, that's why we're gonna. Hey, right. That's what it says. It literally says. He intended outer course, not intercourse. That was my white boy voice. So.
Huh.
Yeah, that ain't bad. That ain't bad. But we're gonna start off with Kelly. So you know what I was thinking the other day?
What's that?
That Bump and Grind song, when he was like, my mind telling me no, but my body, my body's telling me, yeah, hey, right when he said that.
Mm.
So my brain calculated he was in the room with a 13-year-old, right? This is what my brain calculated. He was in the room with a 13-year-old, and he was trying to take advantage of her. He wanted to. His mind was telling him no, but his body was telling him yes. And he was like, he don't want to hurt nobody, but it's something that he must confess. But he never really confessed fully until now. Does that make sense? Or is it just my craziness?
Actually, that do make a certain kind of weed and does high sense. You know? It does.
It does. On some level. It's funny, too.
A little bit of sense. You know, if you get real high and tilt your head sideways and take a swig of some Stryker.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess that's how you come up with out of course instead of in the course, though, too, right?
That's true. That's true. R. Kelly is a nasty, sick man. I'm so sick and tired of people trying to defend Buddy. If you like his music, fine. I'm not telling nobody not to like R. Kelly's music. I'm really not. But don't defend the sexual predator. Don't be like only God can judge me, because that's some bullshit too. We all know that there was a lot of judging going on in the Bible. Human to human judging, not God to human judging.
Yeah. People stop with that dumbass shit to my don't judge. Man, motherfuckers, bitch, I told y'all before, you can have a career as a fucking judge. So stop with that. You can't judge. People get judged all the time. Like, go ahead, goddammit. I'm sorry. Yeah, I hit
and nowhere in the Bible does it say not to judge. Like, actually, in the scripture that people like to use doesn't say don't judge. It says make sure that you've cleared your own issues so that you can see clearly enough to help me clear mine. That's not saying don't judge. Get the plank out of your eye so that you can see clearly to remove the plank from mine. That's saying judge me. Just make sure that you're in a position to where you can help me get out of my situation. So that's, and there are other scriptures in there as well, but they all center around don't judge someone's intent. But nowhere does it say I can't judge your actions. There's a whole book of judges. Like you said, there's a whole career path, and there was back then of judges. Hell, Solomon was like, I'm going to cut this baby in half to see who get the baby and who don't. That was a judgment call. And then he decided the woman who didn't want the baby cut in half, she got the baby. That's judgment. You can be judged by people. It is ordained by every religion. Otherwise, we live in a chaotic society where people can just run around and do whatever the hell they want. R. Kelly is a sexual predator. You don't have to believe none of the other stories. But you can't deny the fucking tape.
Man, R. Kelly married Aaliyah when she was 15. Do we forget about that?
I think we don't even know about that. I mean, man. I know those of us that are older do. But no, I can't even say that.
But it's like, all right, if you didn't know R. Kelly, when he was about 30?
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely in his 20s somewhere.
He was in the late 20s, early 30s when he married Liz. She was 15 years old. I was in the fifth grade. I was mad. And I remember because my teacher looked at me and was like, boy, shut up. Boy, you ain't had no chance with that damn girl anyway. My teacher told me that. I had to laugh. I didn't feel like I was mad, but I had to laugh. But it was funny. But he married Aaliyah. Well, she was 15. And the excuse people make is, well, his parents, the one gave him to her. All right, so it's like, so if I give you a heroin needle, that means you have to put it in your arm? If I give you a pile of syphilis, do you have to put your face in it? Like, come on, man. Like, just because parents offer up their child to him or their children to him, don't mean you have to do it. Like, they both was, it was a mutual agreement. They were helping each other. They both sick. The parents sick. And R. Kelly is a sick fuck. And he can't read. And I guess he feel like if he tell us he can't spell, he can't read, we supposed to feel sorry for him.
Hey, man, you ain't got to know how to read to know that messing around with underage girls is illegal and nasty. Like, you ain't, like, we not in the goddamn 1800s no more where you can start fucking on a chick when she's 15 years old. Like, we not there no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, times have moved on. You know, so, like, I'm disgusted with R. Kelly, yeah, but I'm even more disgusted with the millions and millions of people that enable his ass by sitting right there okaying the shit simply because they like his fucking music. Like at this point, you know, you ask the question, so what happens if R. Kelly fucks with your daughter or your niece or somebody you knew? What happens then? Like, do you still like his music enough to be like, you know, ah, well, girl, shut up. I'm going to keep bumping R. Kelly anyway.
Well, see, that's different because they love that person, so that's different. So they can't, you know, R. Kelly messing with them is different. And like, if it's somebody I don't give a shit about, then, you know, I'm going to keep supporting him. But if it's somebody I care about, then, you know, these are these people.
Go ahead.
But, you know, but that's how people are taking it. It's like, and we know how society is built, though. If you don't care about that person, then it doesn't really matter until it affects you personally. But like the third angle to that is not only just the people who still supporting him, it's the people who offered their children up to him. Yeah, she might be 18, 19, she might be 17, she might be 16, but you put her in that position. You knew better what was going on. But you wanted your compensation on the other end. I guess Kelly, like I said, tell us he can't read, tell us he can't spell, tell us he had sex with his friend's wife, he tell us he ain't got no money and he had all his publishing and all this. I guess, you know, all this stuff. Man, we don't care about that. That ain't got nothing to do with you being a sexual predator. Right. Might give a shit about that.
Right.
You need your ass whooped.
He does on multiple occasions. I just don't. And again, like I know how to make the distinction and compartmentalize. If you really like somebody, what they've done, like, there's a duality to everybody. Everybody has a good and a bad.
Right.
And you can acknowledge both. Like, I can acknowledge what R. Kelly has done for music while at the same time acknowledging that R. Kelly is a sexual predator. And I don't understand why that's such a difficult concept. I can also acknowledge that in acknowledging that R. Kelly is a sexual predator, my continuing to support R. Kelly encourages and influences and enables his predation. So I got to understand that component as well. And so as much as I might love R. Kelly, I'm not saying you can't listen to no more R. Kelly songs. If you already bought a CD and you want to bump it, bump it. But understand that if you buy a new CD or if you spend $20, $30, $40, $50 on an R. Kelly show ticket to go see him live, you're supporting rape culture.
Yeah, R. Kelly shouldn't come to your town and have people show up at his show. Like, he admitted, in his damn song, he admitted everything but what he was supposed to admit.
Well, he admitted that. He just did it flicked it. He's like, so I love these women, both young and old. I think that's when he said that on one part. And then I know in another part, he said something like, I love these girls and they young girls. So what, that made me a pedophile, you know, to which we both laughed. Because, you know, it's like, yeah, actually, that's exactly what makes you a pedophile. You loving on young girls.
But don't judge me, though.
Yeah.
No, they always say that. Don't judge me, though.
You notice people only say that when they do some fucked up shit.
Yeah,
when they do some good shit, they want all the positive praise. And people don't even equate. Somebody giving you praise is still judgment.
Yeah.
Like, that's still, like, they're just giving you positive judgment, positive feedback.
Man, I like
but
that.
But it's still judgment. Somebody, like, saying to you, man, you did that thing good. Girl, you wearing the shit out of that dress off. Oh, you look so pretty. Those are all judgments.
It is positive.
But that's okay. But the moment somebody say, you fucked up. You can't judge me. All right. Well, I'm going to remember that when you do something good.
Man, look, man. We need to stop that bullshit. Get off the bullshit. Like, it's not cool to support rape culture. It's not cool to make excuses just because these are things that you yourself enjoy. Like, that's not, like, you're not being a competent, responsible adult. Like, you basically being one of the people who don't give a shit about nothing outside of your personal bubble. And that doesn't make you a good person. That makes you a selfish-ass person who, like he said, contributes to rape culture. You can't be a person who is against rape culture until it conflicts with something that you love. Now you're full of shit. And you got to be called out for that. Like, R. Kelly, nobody should be contributing any dollars, anything financially to his ass. No. Not now. It need to be fixed, and his ass ain't fixed. Yeah, from this long ass song, we found out that he fucked up. But we already knew that. We just know a little more why he fucked up. But that still don't excuse his behavior. If it was a crackhead, you ever notice how crackheads don't get no love? Like if you're a crackhead, man, people will throw your ass away. But if you're a pedophile and you can make good music, people will make excuses for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Why is domestic and sexual violence the two of the crimes that people make the most excuses for the perpetrators? That's that bullshit. Like, I don't know. You tell me, Patch, why they do that shit, man.
I think because those are very personal crimes, and they're very close crimes, very, not vulnerable, but, they're very intimate crimes. And intimate crimes oftentimes seem to be the hardest ones for people to accept because they hit so close to home. Usually they involve some sort of violation by somebody that you have emotional confidence in, somebody that you trust. And nobody wants to acknowledge that somebody close to somebody else could do something bad, because then they would have to also acknowledge that somebody close to them could do something bad. You know, and with singers and celebrities, we get into this interesting area where people are so emotionally tied to these celebrities that even though they never met the celebrity before in their life, you know, they feel like that person is a part of who they are. Like for a lot of these R. Kelly fans, being an R. Kelly fan is an identity for them. Like, it's not their only identity, but it is an identity. And it's the same thing, you know, we look at the Beehive, the Bayhive, whatever. You know, for them, being a Beyonce fan is an identity. It's a part of who they a part of who they are, a group that they identify themselves with. And when you get into that space of fanaticism, you know, you become very sensitive about what goes on around that person because you're emotionally tied to them. And, you know, I just think the whole system is the way our emotions are set up, the way our psychology is set up. The more you get to understand human nature and behavior, the more you realize that our society is not set up in a way that would be beneficial and conducive towards us growing as emotionally stable people. You know, we push celebrity status and fanaticism on the people because it turns a profit, not really thinking about the deteriorative effect it has on society as a whole and on cultures as a whole. Like, but it's a whole other gray area. I know, and we could talk about this R. Kelly shit and people being fucked up and sexual domestic violence all day, but I know we got other topics on the agenda.
Yeah. And we do, but it's like with the celebrity worship and all this stuff, that it's come on, especially the adults, grow up, man. Come on, man. Y'all know damn well your love for a celebrity ain't gonna make no goddamn difference in your life. Like,
I do want to address one thing though, and that's the fact that everybody keeps saying it don't affect me or it don't affect you. And like, these are the moments where I'm like, we gotta think, we gotta expand our thinking a little bit, especially when it comes to celebrities. First off, everything that happens affects you directly or indirectly. We live in a connected society and we are a social people. That means that no matter what happens and no matter where it happens, if you trickle it down long enough, it affects you some kind of way. Kid in Chicago. Well, I don't want to use Chicago. A kid in Wisconsin. That's better. You know, does something crazy to another kid. That kid moves to another city, raises a kid, but he's so fucked up from what happened that he raises a fucked up kid. That kid grows up and moves to a city and bumps into, say, your kid. They get in a relationship, and now he's beating the fuck or she's beating the fuck out of your kid. And you're like, why the fuck, you know what I'm saying? Now you're asking all these questions, trying, but it all started from a kid in Wisconsin, goddamn 60, 70 years ago, that ain't have nothing to do with you or your family. Shit is related. Shit affects other things. This R. Kelly situation enabling sexual predators like that. Some kid looks up to R. Kelly and has some sort of nasty inclination towards pedophilia and sees R. Kelly getting covered. You know, he does his thing. He develops the same type of emotional fan base that R. Kelly has. And now he does some sort of harem or some sort of sex den filled with minors that your child ends up in. You know what I'm saying? First thing you would say to yourself, you ain't no motherfucking R. Kelly. Meanwhile, 10 years ago, which would be this time, you bought an R. Kelly ticket and was defending R. Kelly. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit is related, and I'm not wishing that on anybody. I'm just saying things do affect you just because they aren't currently affecting you. And then we're black people. So anything that one black person does, unfortunately, affects every black person in America. And that's something else we've got to accept. We don't have to like it. Nobody likes it. But it's true. It affects all of us. A black person robbing a bank in California affects me in Charlotte, North Carolina.
So you saying Trey Songz gonna be the next R. Kelly?
No, I hope not. I mean Trey Songz is a stand up dude. I don't think he got no inclinations towards pedophilia.
I just said that because everybody thought he was gonna be the next R. Kelly musically. As far as being able to create music.
Yeah, I think that ship is sailed. I do like Trey Songz though. I like some of his songs. Yeah. I do not want to listen to him live. But yeah. His studio albums is straight. But I mean, you get what I'm saying, though. Somebody robbed a bank in California. Now
everything is interconnected, but
right.
these people shouldn't be so integrated in the celebrity stuff that it really hits home like that. Like, you should be concentrating on your own life and getting your own shit together and making your city better and your community better rather than concentrating on these adults. Like, I mean, not these adults, but concentrating on these celebrities. Like, if you can't be complaining about your community, but then you spend all your time wondering and following these celebrities and all these things, and you can tell me everything that this, if you can tell me a celebrity's favorite color, you need help. Like, why do you know that? Like, I don't need to know all that. Like, not yet. I got a lot of people who, like, I looked up to growing up. Like, you know, Emmitt Smith was my favorite athlete growing up. But I don't know his favorite color. Like, I don't need to know him like that. I just knew he was a good football player, and I liked the football, so I followed him. But it's like when you taking it to that next level, that's kind of creepy. Now, that is creepy. Like, then we got these mediums now. We can virtually stalk people, so that's very creepy.
Yeah, very. Charlamagne,
Yeah, he ain't such a god at all.
So I done read up on this a little bit while we were talking, because I multitask like a motherfucker. And apparently, I guess this is the situation he's catching heat for is a separate incident from the situation that happened with his wife. Now, for me, and I know we talked about this before the show, situation that happened with his wife, I think everybody needs to relax on that. And the reason I say that is because his wife is his wife. She ain't pressing charges. She married him afterwards. I guess she said it wasn't rape.
They had her on the Breakfast Club. She had a they called her. She answered the phone. They had her on the Breakfast Club. She said it wasn't rape, and she said they had sex again the next morning. She said she was very coherent. She knew everything that was going on. That's why she lifted her hips up and let him take her panties off and all those things. That she said it wasn't rape. So. However way anybody else want to try to spin that story or say that she had to do that, whatever. I mean, prove it.
So,
but
no, well, that's nothing to prove there. If she's on the record saying it wasn't rape and he's saying it wasn't fucking rape. They were the only two people there.
But
now,
apparently,
if you change her story later, then we got a separate conversation. But for now.
Well, I know that's one of the things. That's one of the things that I heard, that supposedly there's other audio of him saying that he raped his wife, or saying that she raped him, or whatever.
Well, I know in the Brilliant Idiot show there was a clip of him talking about it, but even in that clip, even in that podcast, he was pretty clear that he didn't rape her. Now I know it sounded fucked up.
Yeah, because that is, if my memory serves me correct, and we're talking about the same one, that's the one where he was talking about he had the drinks and he had the Spanish fly and he had sex with her and, like, people saw her naked, but he ain't really some of that. If that's the same encounter, I'm not sure if that's the same encounter, but.
Well, I'm not either. I mean, Charlamagne, I don't know. The dude is, I don't know. I mean, he's openly admitted to being somebody that was actively engaged in supporting rape culture, and he said he didn't know what he was doing, but he's come out and apologized, so who knows what kind of fucked up shit he's done over the years. And that's not just to harp on him, because I think a lot of these motherfucking dudes running around out here claiming to be sanctified and holy that have done the exact same type shit that Charlamagne has done. So I can't get on him about his wife. Now, the situation regarding the 15-year-old girl, he threw a party.
Yeah.
She showed up at I don't see where it said anywhere that he brought her, but she was at the party, and he left the party to go get some weed, and she got raped while he was gone. You know, like that. I guess it was two girls, so they was both 15. All right, Charlamagne,
you helped create an environment for her to be raped.
That's some fuckboy shit.
Right. That's one of the stances I have on him, though, is I do think he's a fuckboy. He's a member of the National Football Association of America. I do feel like he's a part of that. I feel like people are putting him on a pedestal that he don't deserve to be put on, that he never really asked to be put on. Like, stop trying to make this man some kind of intellectual giant, some kind of hero, some kind of leader for the community, when that's not what he is. He's a weird ass dude who's now a fuckboy, that's certified a fuckboy. I mean, it's the same dude who, when Jennifer Lopez got up from the interview, smelled the chip. Like, weird people do that shit. You don't smell no goddamn. Why you know she washed her ass?
Yeah, I mean, he's a shock jock. He does silly, shocking things for ratings and views and all this other, like, he says and does crazy shit. So I'm with you in that. Like, I don't understand where we got in this space with Charlamagne, and this is where I give him credit. He's never claimed to be anything other than what he is.
Right. It's not him. It's the people who put him up there. Now they're disappointed when they're finding out that, oh, dang, he ain't what I thought he was, because that's your fault, because he always been weird.
Right. The dude has always been what he is, and what he is has always worked for him, because people have always wanted to see him or listen to him do or say random, silly, insane, whatever shit. So, is he a fuckboy? I mean, I thought he was a fuckboy before all of this happened.
Yeah, he's been that for me. I mean, he's been that for me. I mean, I guess people thought because he put out that book that he's supposed to be an intellectual now. But I'm like, okay, whatever, man, you know. This the same dude go around talking about he want to suck farts out of people's butt.
Right. So, I mean, he said some random ass shit, you know, that I can't agree with. But one thing I do appreciate about Charlamagne is that he's standing on his block. You know what I'm saying? He's standing his square. He's okay with people calling him a fuckboy. He's okay with having conversations about some of the fucked up shit that he's done. He's okay with that. And so in that, he's still a fuckboy, but it's almost like you want to overlook it because he'll talk to you about his fuckboyness. You know what I'm saying? Like, he'll have the conversation. So I don't know, like, with this whole Charlamagne thing, as much as I understand the situation with the 15-year-old girl that was fucked up, if you throw a party, you are responsible for what happens at that party. And that's for all of y'all getting ready to throw parties. You're responsible for what happens. Don't leave your party. And if you need, ID everybody that come into your party. But you're responsible. So for him to set that situation up and then leave to go get weed, yes, he is somewhat responsible for those girls getting raped. That's a part of the deal.
Right. I mean, what's going back to what you said about him owning his fuckboyness, he also come out and said that he know he contributed to that. He called himself apologizing for that. So,
he never denied nothing. And that's what's interesting. Like,
right.
We're attacking the man who is very openly, plainly, and right in your face saying, yeah, I fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're defending the man who admitted to everything except being a pedophile.
Because he made good music, man. R. Kelly made people feel good, man.
I ain't nobody fucking with this dumb shit, man. People are so goddamn ass backwards. And then, you know, we find out yesterday that Charlamagne's DNA wasn't found in the rape kit, which pretty much concludes, you know, there it is. He didn't rape nobody. He a fuckboy, not a rapist, as Joe put it before the show started.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Charlamagne is, straight fuckboy. But I don't see any evidence to say that he's a rapist. But I wouldn't trust him around my girls. If I had girls, I wouldn't trust him around my girls. I wouldn't trust him around my female friends. I wouldn't hook none of them up with him if he was like a single dude. So I do look at his wife sideways, but. You know, that's my personal thing. That's my personal problem. That's nothing against him or his family. That's just me. But that's how I look at it. I wouldn't, if you were a female who, you know, a woman who, you know, I call myself looking after, I wouldn't leave you alone around him. So.
Well, I think there are like a couple ways to spin it. I mean, on one angle, maybe he does just do that shit for the podcast, for the ratings and whatnot. On the other angle, if that really is who Charlamagne is, you know, sniffing chairs and flirting and making sexual suggestions and all of that, if that really is who Charlamagne is, then yeah, I'm looking at his wife as well, and I'm like, yo, that, you know, that's kind of wild that you, like, that seemed kind of disrespectful to me. But if that's their relationship, that's their relationship, but, you know, everybody, I'm definitely entitled to side-eyeing the shit out of everything involved in that situation. If Charlamagne really is around here sniffing chairs and doing all of that genuinely, even though he married and got a wife at home, I would like to think that it's just a part of the show. But as we said earlier, you know, Charlamagne is a fuckboy. You can't really put boxes on fuckboy behavior.
I guess he said he'll sniff a chip, but he'll come home faithfully.
I mean, you know, if she happy and he ain't fucking her up, all I can do is say Charlamagne is a weirdo and he does some fuckboy type shit. But I can't really, like, hardcore attack him because
if she like it,
there to attack.
Yeah, if she like it and it's not detrimental to her or her way of life, then who am I? I'm going to talk about it, and I can talk about it, and I will, but he ain't got to listen to me.
I just think we get up in arms about all the wrong shit. Like, we letting other people drive. We're continuing to let other people drive our emotions instead of looking at the shit and driving it for ourselves. You know, like, that's like this dude, Derek Jackson, or this motherfucking. The only reason I'm bringing him up is because I just came across another link of somebody talking about Derek Jackson. You know, he put out the Facebook video talking about Charlamagne confessed to rape and nobody's talking about it.
And I'm like,
people were talking about it. You just weren't in the loop. And he didn't confess to rape. Like, he didn't confess to raping anybody.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm starting off saying is Derrick Jackson is a fuckboy. He's also a member of the National Football Association of America. The extra, extra fuckboy part. Because my biggest beef with Derrick Jackson is Derrick Jackson is a con artist, a scam artist. And I wish women would wake up and see what the fuck he got going on. Because go to his website. There's no information on his website to help black men become better men. But his whole platform is to tell women how fucked up black men are. But he ain't doing nothing to help. I haven't seen nothing. Show me something. If I'm wrong, let me know I'm wrong. And then send me the information. But I ain't found no information where he's helped actually doing anything or having the information geared toward helping black men become better. He's just telling black women, he's just telling scorned women what they want to hear. That's what's going on.
Don't know a whole lot about Buddy, so I can't speak on him strong, but I do dislike, let me put it this way, 90% of the motivational speakers and bullshit artists that I've met, I shouldn't say bullshit artists. 90% of the motivational whatevers that I've met have been bullshit artists. So I'm already kind of leery on that point of him saying, you know what I'm saying, he's a motivational speaker. I say a good chunk, 90 to 95% of the relationship gurus that I've ever met have been complete and utter bullshit artists and scam artists and con men. So he's a combination of the two. I don't know if he is in the majority of both of those people that claim both those titles, but I will say I haven't seen anything from him that is extremely profound. He does a lot of thin slicing, which there's nothing wrong with thin slicing, but he does it out of context. And when you do thin slicing out of context, you end up making very, very egregious errors. And when I listen to him talking about shit, that's what I hear. A dude making a whole bunch of statements about the masses of people and not being accurate to what I see and what I know the vast majority of the time. Now, granted, I surround myself with stand-up dudes, so I don't know nothing about the fuckboys he's talking about. But my comment is always, if you're surrounded by the types of fuckboys that he's describing on a regular basis, you need to do some introspection to figure out if you're a fuckboy or a pussy hoe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Man, he got this book, Single Mothers Are For Grown Men Only. it's because the approach is like men are incompetent, men are unable. And men are just so fucked up. But it's like, but you a dude. So what is that? What are you standing this? Like, if you a man and men are so fucked up like that. Who taught you? Like, did you learn from aliens or something? Did you not learn from these same men that you keep claiming that you're better than? So then if you didn't, then who taught you how to be a man? And if it was an alien who taught you how to be a man, then he teach you how to be an earth man. Because right now it don't seem like it.
Right.
Got a book called I Still Deserve It. And, I mean, it's a cheating man's heart and a cheating man's heart too. All these things. It's like, I mean, I'm all for information to give people to help empower people. I'm all for empowerment information. But I find it useless to try to empower women and just ignore the retraining of men. But what are you empowering women for? To date outside the race? So now we got to look at you like you're an agent now.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be a serious and legitimate relationship, whatever, you need to, you can't be in a relationship by yourself. You can't fix a relationship by only speaking to one party. You need to talk to both men and women. And anybody I see, everybody, and this is 100%, everybody I've seen that focuses on one party over the other, they're almost all of the times pumping bullshit. And I'm saying almost because I don't like dealing in absolute. But they are always, every single instance I've run into, those people have been pumping bullshit. Every single, and that's because it's impossible to strengthen a relationship by only working on one piece of it. It's impossible. And it's also impossible to thin slice relationships that you have no information on. I can't help you in your relationship if I haven't seen the way you guys interact. Now, if I've seen the way you guys interact, then it's possible for me to thin slice a relationship. But there's no way in hell that I can sit back and put out relationship advice and have it be applicable to every single body out there in every single context in the way that a lot of these relationship gurus do. Like, it's not possible for you to thin slice absent a context. And that's my beef with him. Every single video of his that I've seen, like you said, Joe, he's been on some, five ways to tell if your man don't love you, 10 ways to tell if your man ain't shit, how you know if your man been fucking around, blah, blah. Like, you telling on yourself, bro. This is how you know that you ain't shit, how a woman can tell if you've been fucking around. How, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't, you know, it don't work. I know dudes that have been married for 15 years. They're not my friends, but I know them. They've been married. They fuck around all the time, and by all standards, they're the most stand-up dudes you'll ever meet. The only reason I know that they fucked up is because they told me they fucked up, at which point they stopped being friends or acquaintances.
This dude got some flashcards called how to know if he is or not a fuckboy. He got some flashcards dedicated to telling you. Like, one of them is, she says, I'm free this weekend if you like to do anything or if you like to do something. He says, cool, what you want to do. So I guess if you say that and you'll do it, then you're a fuckboy, I guess.
Well, I guess I'm a fuckboy too then, because I say that all the time to my wife. What you want? She always asks me, I'm free, what's up? I don't know what you want to do.
Hey, man, look,
I ain't got plans all the goddamn time.
I find it funny that people label themselves as specific, like relationship guru. You and I have had this conversation. I don't think anybody could necessarily become a relationship guru because of the nature of human beings is always evolving and it's an ever learning thing. So you and your relationship experience, you may have certain tips that could possibly help me in my relationship, but that doesn't necessarily make you a guru, because why are you a guru, but my dad is not a guru? let's say my parents been married for 47 years. You've been married, like Steve Harvey been married 3 times. He's a relationship guru. But let's say my parents been married 47 years. So what makes Steve Harvey more of a guru than parents who've been married 47 years? But just because they married 47 years, what makes them gurus? It's like, I just don't think people can be relationship gurus, because relationships are continuously changing and growing. And part of that, you understanding that you are on a everlasting ride and being willing to grow with the person. So yes, you can teach people to not be so combative, not be so argumentative, but there's going to be things and elements in each relationship that nobody else has probably experienced, or they may have experienced to the degree that you're experiencing. So it's to me, like, relationship gurus, when I see people who are relationship experts and gurus, just me personally, I kind of turn my head and kind of grimace toward that, because what you trying to sell me, you know? Like, how did you become a guru? Like, what was so great about your relationship? You mean tell me you have no, like, where is your relationship status? Where are you? Like, help me out with this. Like, how did you get this position? What makes you a guru?
Well, we know really why this dude, Derek Jackson, is a relationship guru, and it don't have shit to do with his advice. I think a large portion of that, and I know women are going to whatever, but I'm saying what I'm saying. He's a nice-looking dude, and he works out. And he's posing in pictures with his shirt off and then his fancy clothes and all this, that, and the third. Not to say that anybody can't put on a suit and some jeans or a coat top and some jeans or whatever, but, you know, he's a nice-looking dude, and he makes himself look presentable. And that's really all it takes. We know this. Like, women are just as thirsty as men. Just like a girl could post a picture in a thong with her ass out bent over and get a whole bunch of likes, if a dude go to the gym and get himself looking nice and he was blessed with a handsome face, he could post a picture with his shirt off and get the same kind of attention from women. So, you know, I look at the dude, Derek Jackson, and I hear a bunch of some of the advice is decent. I'm not going to say all of it is trash, but some of the advice is decent, but it's all out of context. You know, it's all heavily slanted, and it's all heavily aimed at placating his fan base. But he's also a presentable dude, a nice-looking dude with a nice body. And I honestly think his physical appearance is doing more for his brand than his advice.
Well, I know I've seen videos out of women calling him a fake, and I, you know, so I started watching one a couple days ago, but then I had to stop to do some other stuff, so I never finished it. But
it ain't gonna matter.
You know
how this thing works. We talking about R. Kelly all over again. Not saying that the dude is a rapist, but we are saying that, you know, once people develop that emotional connection to you, the whole world could be screaming out, and they don't care.
Yeah, but fuck him. And enough about him, man. Let's move on from his software. But recently, there have been a string of killings of white people killing black people. The most notable is the Nia Wilson murder in Oakland, and the black guy who got shot in the chest by the white guy in the parking lot. I forgot what city that was in. But these murders, to me, are... they're happening because it goes back to what we've been saying for a while, is white America been declared war on black people. And these white races, they're going to continue picking off who they deem as the innocent. And we got to change the way we exist, or we ain't going to last. I mean, it's really just that simple. Like, this wasn't random. Like, this Nia Wilson thing wasn't random. No, it's just like lions don't randomly hunt. Lions, they hunt. It's strategized. So dude picked off somebody he deemed as weak. Like, I mean, the stand your ground thing. I think that was here in Florida, yeah, with the shooting. Let's be real. Stand Your Ground is for white folk. We've been told y'all that. Stand Your Ground was made for white folk. It ain't made for black folk. So that white boy's going to be able to claim Stand Your Ground by shooting a black man in the chest. Saying, well, the black man attacked me. We have to change. We have to change the way we do things. Like, I'm looking at the camera, and it's like, I'm not blaming the black man for anything, but it's just like, I'm just in my head. I'm like, I wish he would have pushed the dude down and kind of stayed closer to him where he can more so control his hands and things. That's just what I'm thinking, because these white folk, they're not going to hesitate to kill us. These white people who subscribe to white supremacy, they're not going to hesitate to kill us to take us out, because that's the orders. That's what they're supposed to be doing, taking us out. And y'all keep right here playing around, you're going to start to see numbers dwindle more and more and more and more and more. So you better wake up. What you got to say about that?
I mean, it's sad. It's sad. It's always tragic. And we know that for every Nia Wilson that gets reported, you know, there are two or three that didn't.
Right.
You know, for everyone that actually got murdered, we know that there are probably 10, 15, maybe 20 that just got the fuck beat out of them. You know, that just got their head bashed in, but they survived. You know, and for every one of those that got their head bashed in but survived, you know, you got maybe a couple hundred that were humiliated, that were just emotionally damaged by what happened, even if they weren't physically battered. So I agree, we are in a situation where, and this is where I get so disheartened, because we have the same tactics every time something happens. A march, a vigil, you know, right. a rally, somebody speak, everybody get riled
say
up,
her name.
And go home.
Say her name.
Right.
You got to do more than that.
Change. Like, when do we see changes in the community? When do we stop letting black people, not just women, men too, when do we stop being out alone anywhere, especially at night, though? This is an 18-year-old girl out on a Sunday night by herself standing at the bus stop at the transit station, if I'm understanding correctly. Why was she there by herself? Was she talking to anybody? Why was she out there alone? If she was on the phone, who is the person she was on the phone with? And what are they saying?
But see, the problem with that is, depending on what's going on in their life, the structure of everything, who's in their life, who's out of their life, a lot of these people, they can't, I mean, it is what it is. That's the best it's going to get. They got to be out there alone.
No.
Because nothing else is organized in the community. It ain't got nobody else.
And that's exactly what I'm getting at. If somebody, there should always be an option to have somebody somewhere with you. And that's something that starts with the community. Damn the family. The community. Like, so, and if you have to be somewhere by yourself, you need to have somebody with you on the phone. Somebody needs to be in communication with you. You shouldn't be isolated nowadays. In the Trump era of America, where these white supremacists are all riled up and they all looking for somebody. And I know everybody's like, well, yeah, but we shouldn't be living our lives scared. Well, now we're at a point where we have to live our lives scared, because nobody did anything to create systems of protection while all of these motherfuckers were sleeping planning. And now that they're awake and they're actually doing shit, you got a plan. But you're not ready to deal with what they've been doing. So when you're planning, you have to be afraid. Because fear serves a very powerful purpose of keeping you the fuck alive.
But it's not even fear, it's tact. I mean, it's understanding. Like, you ain't got to be fearful to be ready. It's like, if somebody tell you that they don't mind killing you off, I'm not going to meet you with hugs and kisses. I'm going to be ready for you. It's just, to me, it's just intelligence. It ain't got nothing to do with fear. It's intelligence.
Well, like, I'm calling it fear, because I know that's the word people want to use, and that's the word people want to push back on. I am not afraid. There's nothing wrong with being afraid. I agree with you, Joe, and I honestly think fear is intelligence. It's intelligence in action. You see a goddamn lion walking down the street, your ass is afraid. That's because you're smart enough to know what that motherfucker could do to you. So, you know what I'm saying? So I'm with you in that, but I'm using the word because that's the word everybody's going to push back on. In the case of this young lady, and in the case of all of these young people that keep experiencing things, because there have been things happening right here in Charlotte. We got to get to a point where we do more than walk down the street, hold up signs, and then go back to sleep. Like, what are we going to do to change things? And there's a lot that you can do to change things. You could community review boards for the police, community networking programs, safety programs where you have somebody monitoring the block, dial-in, a peer or partnership programs where there's somebody available to be there for other people whenever they need all hours of the night. You know what I'm saying? Surveillance programs where you have somebody monitoring the police, or monitoring, you know, like not monitoring them, but, you know, if they come in your neighborhood, these are people that are watching what they're doing when they're rolling through your neighborhood. And the same with strange figures. If somebody don't look right, don't seem right, you got a group of people that's not just looking the other way. You know what I'm saying? They're keeping tabs on this mother. Like, those are the types of things, and I know it seems paranoid. I know it seems extreme, but when motherfuckers are dying and getting beaten and getting emotionally damaged at the rate that they're getting in our communities, you got to go to those types of measures.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, go back to being just damn intelligent, man. Like, if you live in a neighborhood full of crackheads, you're not going to leave your house unlocked. You're going to check your shit before you leave. But if you live in a society full of maniacal, maniac terrorists, you try to find ways to, let's have a conversation and meet halfway. That's stupid. They want to kill you off, and you want to let them get to know you better. So maybe they won't be so mean if we get to know each other, because, you know, love conquers all. All right, love gonna get your ass killed too.
And you know the argument every time some shit like this happened. He was mentally ill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a hate crime. There's no evidence that this. Look, first, and let's get it. Look, first off, it's very few white motherfuckers that's keeping a diary of how much they hate black people. Like, it's very few of that. It's not a whole lot of that going on. So chances of them finding proof that it was a hate crime by legal standards is damn near non-existent. But what other explanation could there be for a white male arbitrarily stabbing a black girl to death?
It's a hate crime.
Sounds like a hate crime to me.
No, come on, man. It's a hate crime. I just pick somebody. Like, you go through all these people out here. Because I think they stabbed the sister and killed her. So the only way
I would be like, that's not a hate crime is if they was like outside of his house and he just walked outside and they were standing there. Then I'd be like, all right, man, maybe the dude just snapped. But if he ain't lived nowhere near them, if he had to pass by a bunch of people to get to that situation.
If my memory serves me correct, I know I was watching some Tariq Nasheed was talking about the other day, and they were saying he's part of the one of the white supremacist groups that you have to kill a black person to kind of be the initiation. You got to kill a black person, so they were like the black boots. If you got like the black white supremacist boots with the white white shoelaces, that means you haven't killed a black person. So in order for you to get your red shoelaces, you got to kill a black person, and so they. No tying all that to this. So it was racially motivated. Like, all these people, and you choose two black girls.
And then what kind of coward ass shit is that you choose two black girls?
And run. Pussy.
You know, like, you ain't want to run up on a black dude. I mean, we don't want no brothers to get killed either. But you know what I'm saying? I think a dude has a better chance of whooping your motherfucking ass than two young teenage girls.
But I want us. It's like I was going through a post on social media, and they were talking about black people being more armed. And I want you black people who are armed to chill the fuck out and stop acting like you better black people than black people who are not armed. Like, your ass ain't shooting nobody. You ain't stopping nothing from happening. You ain't helping nobody. You ain't doing none of that stuff. So nobody cares that you go to the shooting range and wasting bullets on targets that don't move. All right? You're not better than all other. You're not no super black person. You're not no Avenger. You're not part of the Justice League. You're not part of none of them shits like that. Just because your ass go to the bullet, to the gun range and shoot your bullets at motherfucking targets that ain't shooting back at you. So when you get into a gunfight and somebody who's trying to kill you, come holler at me.
Because let's be honest. I haven't read of no cases where somebody that was armed, actually, the black person that was armed, actually used their weapon to save their lives or the lives of somebody else from a white supremacist. I haven't seen that story anywhere.
Right. I mean, that's just where I'm in with that. But at the same time, I do think black people need to take being armed more seriously. I do think we need to learn to defend ourselves with or without weapons. I do think we need to, like I was saying, when I was looking at the video, I'm not going to blame the guy, because I don't think the guy did anything wrong, but I just wish he would have pushed the white dude down and kind of pinned his ass down or whooped his ass or something. It just made me think that you kind of never know what somebody got on them. And what's one of the best ways, like, if you push somebody down like that, what's one of the best ways to still kind of defend yourself and whatever? And I was just like, well, just beat the shit out of that person after you push them down. I mean.
But that's where I'm at with it. I think we need to take racism more seriously. If we start to do that, if we start to take white supremacy more seriously, then I think everything else will fall in line. But right now, we still got people living in this world where white supremacy is a thing that died in 1964. And that shit just, like, that's the disconnect. You know what I'm saying? Like this shit didn't end. It's still here. It's not coming back. It never fucking left. And so now you got this situation where black people are getting beat up, brutalized, and traumatized all over America in all types of environments. And it's been happening, but now it's getting televised. And motherfuckers is like, what's going on in the country? The same shit that's been going on in the country for the last couple hundred years. Like what are you talking about? Like, let's get serious about white supremacy. And we understand that having a gun doesn't change things. Like, I know how to shoot weapons. I was in the military. I know how to fire a weapon. I also know that 9 times out of 10, when you get involved in the situation, you don't have your weapon with you. And for those with concealed carry permits, even when they do get in situations, the chances of you getting in a situation, a scenario, where you're going to pull your gun and fire it are slim to none. And when you do, you're still going to run head first into the justice system. I'm not saying don't do it, but I am saying, like you said, let's stop acting like black people getting weapons is the solution, because it's not. Let's also remember, and I know a lot of people are going to misunderstand this, and that's cool, but let's also remember that black people with weapons were one of the sparking factors for the Tulsa riot, when all of those black people were killed in Tulsa.
The thing is being strategic about becoming weaponized.
Right.
Because not taking the social media. Look, the such and such and such gun club has a meeting today, and we out here firing our guns in the backyard, like being strategic, being tactical, like really learning how to defend yourself with the guns and the things that you use. Like, it's like not just going out, just trying to be a social media for us to get likes and get out. Look, we the most militant black people on the block. Look, we got 25 black people marching down the street with guns. Yeah, y'all ass is trying to get killed. You're not even gonna have a chance to bang on nobody because you ain't gonna last long enough. Because your ass gonna be infiltrated 3 a.m. because you done told everybody what the hell you doing. It's like the strategy in the organization is missing.
Right, and that's exactly what I was finna say. We need more strategy, and we need more organization. We need better tactics. But we can't do any of that until we get serious about white supremacy, and that's what's up first. We need to get serious about white supremacy.
Straight up. I mean, these crackers ain't playing with us, man. They attack. Like, men, black men have been basically taken out of the way. So that's why women, the elderly, and the children are being attacked the way they are, because black men have been basically rendered obsolete. Even a lot of the black men who go around screaming every day about how black men need to stand up and do this and do that, they're not doing that. You got only a few who are. Only a few men who doing some things, but for the most part, people are just talking, and that's the problem with the black community. That's why we're dying like this, because we got to do more than just talk. We have to truly get organized so we can help ourselves instead of just fucking talking all the goddamn time.
But getting organized is boring because it requires you to actually learn some shit and figure some shit out. You do your community no good being a 6'6", 250-pound, all-arm, muscle-strong, cock diesel black dude that don't know shit about your history, your heritage, your culture, and don't know the laws of the land. And I'm not talking about the Moorish science laws. I'm talking about the written laws of American society. If you can't understand and decode that, you've lost the fight before it even starts. So, we can't, and that's one of the reasons why we can't get organized, is because people aren't taking the necessary steps to understand the world and the system in which they live. You know what I'm saying? If you want to make a difference, if you really want to teach these kids how to survive, teach them the law, and then teach them what it looks like when it's being broken and how to navigate the system. Because we know that knowing the law doesn't mean anything if you don't know how it's applied, and even knowing how it's applied means nothing if you don't understand how people maneuver around it. The moment you can figure all those three things out, you can begin to successfully plan for what's happening in the justice system, what's going on. You can successfully strategize about that now. You know what I'm saying? It's the same with politics. Figure out civics. Figure out how local politics work. Figure out how regional politics work. And then figure out how national politics work. And figure out how everybody maneuvers in it, not just the law of politics, and not just the surface of politics, but the dark, shady rooms of politics as well. Once you figure all that out, you can begin to strategize about how to use politics.
Yeah, but, that's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show, even though we talked about it before. But, yeah, but let's move on real quick, man, so we won't stay on this the whole night. But a whole bunch of bodies were found in some graves. And you heard about this in Texas, about the graves, about the bodies that were found in the graves, like the I guess you could say, like, the indentured servants or something like that in the mass grave in the Texas border. You heard about that?
Was it recently or?
Yeah, this the grave was discovered recently. So, this month. It says an hour drive from the Mexican border and cactus-covered ranch land. There's a spot many undocumented immigrants walk through hell to avoid. It's the Texas Border Patrol Station in Brooks County, Texas. One of the last layers of security and one of the busiest checkpoints in the state with more than 10,000 vehicles per day, yada, yada, yada. The journey around the checkpoint can take several days and yada, yada, yada. It's basically about 2 weeks ago in Fall Forest, a small town in the northeastern part of the country, of the county, a team of archaeologists uncovered a mass grave where many immigrants' remains had been buried in trash bags, shopping bags, body bags, or no bags at all. Researchers told the Corpus Christi Call-The-Times, which broke the story last week. In one plot, the bones of three bodies were mixed inside of one body bag, and another, at least five bodies and bags were piled one on top of the other. Between the coffin skulls were seized and biohazard bags. The red ones used in receptacles at the doctor's office. So, it's mass grave.
I see.
Exhumed bodies. And they're trying to identify the ones who died. Got a whole bunch of unidentified using all the DNA thing. They say the team has exhumed up to 52 burial plots at Sacred Heart Burial Park in Fall Forest. So at least 52 bodies.
I mean, I'm not surprised. We know that there are mass graves all over the country. I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised if there are more mass graves found in the area in Texas. So
it's supposed to be like indentured servants or like some sharecropping type of thing, and when people would die, they would just bury them and all these other things here. So, but yeah, I'm with you. It's a whole bunch of mass graves all around this country. There's a whole bunch of fuck shit that happened.
And after slavery ended, you know, let's not pretend like peonage didn't happen. So, you know, and we know that there were a lot of people dying in prisons during peonage. And we know that they still didn't give a damn about black bodies. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were, you know, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of mass. I'm pretty sure anywhere you can find an old prison or old government land or state land or even private land that used to house prison facilities, jail facilities, courthouse facilities, especially plantations. Somewhere in the area, I'm pretty positive there's going to be a grave, a mass grave.
Yeah, so, but it just gets back to us really like stop pretending like we live in a fairy tale world where America just this old lovely place where none of the bullshit happened, because it happened. Like people been getting murked in this country forever. Like killing somebody in America, that's so normal. That's more American than apple pie.
Yeah, I mean it's a part of the culture.
I mean, that's how they got here. That's how they got here. That's how America is what it is. Like, motherfuckers had to die. Wars, killing, all these things. Let's stop acting like it ain't. Let's stop acting like America was formed off of peace and love and harmony and all these things. Shit. Like, they can tell you, the media can tell you whatever the hell they want to tell you, but they got actual history books where historians wrote opposite of what the hell the media telling you. So, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the history is out there, man. I mean, it's there. It's not even hidden no more, unless you count being written in a book as being hidden. But history's out there, man. And if we're serious about anything in life, we need to be serious about going out there and finding the history and understanding the history, because, you know, like, we just can't keep doing what we're doing. You know, it's not conducive to our cultural survival. You know, and I know some people might be okay with us culturally dying because they haven't been educated to understand that our culture is a vibrant one with amazing history and something that we should be embracing. They've been raised to think that black culture is a negative thing. But, you know, I think the vast majority of black people understand that the death of black culture would be a very, very tragic thing. And I don't think that we're as far away from that as a lot of people think we are. And I'm using culture for a reason. I'm not talking about the extinction of black people. I'm talking about the extinction of black culture, black thought. You know what I'm saying? The positive black, the positive blackness, shall we say. Especially in this modern day and age where kids are being groomed more and more and more by black people to view what's happening in the white society as superior. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying it's going to happen today, tomorrow, 5 years, 10 years, but I am definitely saying the more that I talk to young kids, the more that I read stuff that younger people are writing, the more that I get involved in that world, the more that I see a depreciating respect for black culture. And the more that I see people outright even saying that there is no such thing as black culture.
I mean, because we've come to look at things. Black people have culture. That's what everybody keep trying to steal from us. They don't. I can tell you, people don't like black people. They like black culture, and that's the thing that people have to understand. Like, black people can be obsolete, but then nobody else could create black culture because other people can't create black culture. Like, you can bring other ethnicities. Yeah, the Hispanic group of people may be able to outnumber us, but as far as cultural influence and all these things here, like nobody can do what the Africans can do. You know, so it's being able to understand that, understand our place, but we have to really take a good look at what we are, where we are in this day and time. To me, from a historical perspective, the world hasn't changed much. Like, it's always been somebody trying to rule the world, not necessarily in a malicious way, but it's always been rulers and people who've been ruled. Like, it's always been like that. The Persians, Egypt was formed because they had to protect themselves against invaders. I mean, things like that. The land of, like, people have always had conflict with other people. Like, people have always tried to rule other people, dominate other people, and those things. Yeah. So let's stop acting like the world was peaceful at once. I don't know if there may have been times where the world have had more peace, but it seems like, and people don't like to acknowledge it. They may not even know, but the world is actually a little less violent now than it actually used to be even a long time ago. So, I mean, you know, we got to stop pretending like this world was a nice place and then all of a sudden it just got bad. Nah, this world been fucked up. They've been having fucked up people. Like, this is not like this the first or third or fourth generation of fucked up people. Nah, man, stuff like that been happening, man. Wake up. Yeah, man. So, but the last thing we want to cover, man, is this Brock Turner. You know about this Brock Turner, this white boy?
Nah, what's up with the white boy?
Man, you ain't heard about him? This is the outer course, not intercourse, dude.
Oh. I still ain't heard about him outside of what you said earlier in the show, man. You know, I be cut off in my own world.
So, he's the former Stanford University swimmer who was convicted of sexually assaulting an unconscious woman in 2016.
Oh, you talked about that on the Freedom Train one day, didn't you? Oh, on the Fix, right?
Yeah. I talked about it on the Fix one day, yeah. Because he raped the unconscious girl. And now, like, his lawyer is launching the bid to overturn his conviction. And it's saying that Brock Turner just wanted to engage in outer courts, not intercourse. So, I don't give a shit what Brock Turner wanted to engage in. She had an unconscious drunk girl and you try to take advantage of her. Throw his pussy ass under the jail. But he's even getting this consideration and this mention because he's white and he's rich. And, you know, they're claiming affluenza with this case as well. So, you know, to get a reduced or even no sentence or like probation and stuff if you claim affluenza. And so it's crazy. It's still contributing to rape culture, but it's also showing that rich white men rule shit. And yeah, it's like, you know, black men are the face of rape in this country, but rich white men are the rapists. You know, rich white men can do whatever the fuck they like. Harvey Weinstein, man.
I feel like I've been talking a lot, so I'm letting you tee off on this one. And I feel like when you went off on it on the Fix, and for those of you that don't listen to the Fix, you should definitely listen to the Fix. It's one of the better shows on the network. Definitely. But I feel like, you know, like when you hit on it on the Fix, you hit it. I mean, so, you know, with them trying to overturn the charge and whatnot, like, to me, that's.
It goes back to that charge of, you know, you protecting your own. And this is what organization can do for you. It means you can fuck up and you would be protected. You don't have to grow up.
Right.
You could be a bitch boy all your life. If you're a rich white man, you can literally be a bitch boy all your life. Because you have the means, you have the resources to fuck up and continue to fuck up. You don't have to be accountable for your actions at all.
So, I mean, I'm with you. I just think the whole situation is jacked, but I really don't have nothing to add that wouldn't be repeating what I said earlier.
But I'm just floored with this whole affluenza and then out of course not. And what the hell is out of course? So he just wanted to rub his meat cross or something? You can't do that either.
I mean, I think when you talked about organization and whatnot, what you just said about organization applies in a super powerful way in this case. Like, it don't get no more clearer about, you know, the power of being organized. And that's one thing we got to understand, even with regards to our oppression in the face of the system and our disadvantage in the system, a lot of that boils down to a lack of organization. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean,
they're organized and we're not.
We're not capable of competing at all right now. Like, we think we are. Like, all these people, we graduate from college and we really think we are. But we still not ready to compete. Like, black people, we got to stop. We keep saying this, man. We keep telling y'all, like, we got to get off the moral victory train. We got to stop with this little stupid stuff that we really feel is gonna change the community, change our situations and stuff, because we keep lying to ourselves. Like, I don't give a damn how many black people graduate from college. That's not changing our situations. It's not changing our economic situations. I mean, it's like, I don't care how many black people get Fortune 500 jobs, all these things, until we decide that we're going to operate differently as a whole, we're not ready to compete against white supremacy. We not at all one iota. I sound like Dr. Anderson, but damn it. We're not ready to compete. We're not ready to do anything. We're not ready to take our place. We're not ready to make anybody respect us. All we're ready to do is keep getting shitted on. And until we do that, I mean, stuff like this, like, people are all up in arms about it, especially black people. People are all up in arms about the situation. But it's like, the judicial system is fucked up. The judicial system is filled with old white rich men. Because they got their stuff together. They've been had their stuff together, and they support one another. They support rape culture. But once again, America itself is complicit in the supporting of rape culture. That's how the culture still exists. I keep telling y'all this. Like, the only way the culture can still exist if people continue to operate within the culture, to make excuses of the culture, to all these things. Like, the lawyer, the dude signed up to be his lawyer. Like, nobody has to be his lawyer. Correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, but is there a law that says somebody has to be this dude's lawyer?
There isn't a law that says somebody has to volunteer. There is a law that he has to have legal representation, but that could come in the form of a court-appointed defender. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But if I'm a lawyer and he want me to represent him and I don't want to represent him, is there anything that would make me?
As you have to represent him, you can turn down clients. They do it all the time.
All right. So that means these people, these lawyers, are also complicit in this system, in this culture of rape. Because for you to come up with the idea of out-of-course versus intercourse. So I guess what, he just want the liquor, the pee on her, to rub his thing across, so he just want to fill on her or something. I mean, what the fuck is that? So, like that's much better. Like, that's okay. Like, oh, well, you know, he just wanted to fill on her. She was drunk and unconscious. And then the affluenza thing, well, he's too rich to go to jail. That's some cracker shit. So, going back to what we've been saying the whole show, black folk, we need to wake up, we need to get up, get out, and get something. Because if not, our ass is going to perish, and we're going to perish quick. 'Cause I know already in my town, within 2 years, at least 11,000 people going to be displaced. Within 2 years on the south side, at least 11,000 people going to be losing their homes because they finna get rid of these projects and build some new structures, and half the population ain't going to be able to live there, maybe more than half. So a lot of things coming down the pipe, Black America, we need to be ready for. We're already outnumbered by the Hispanics. Asians coming for us. We still don't own. Even if we do own a couple corporations, we don't own enough of corporations that can make a difference. I have no real organization, no real money, no real structures, all these things here, and we're just hanging on. So if it ever goes bad, what are we going to do? And it's going bad.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get to the point. We're judging our performance in team sports. We're judging our performance in team sports based on individual accomplishments.
Right.
That's not how you judge your that's not how you rate your performance in the team sport. Who cares if Kobe Bryant dropped 80 points if the Lakers lost? And that's what we keep having happen. People keep dropping 80, 90 points, and we as a team keep losing. And I don't know when we're going to gain that level of understanding that, look, it's not about how many selfish, individualistic kids graduate from college. It's not going to impact our situation in it. You know what I'm saying? It's not about how many Fortune 500 Black people we have if they all only hire white corporate, white people, or non-Black people, because they view them as being the subject matter experts instead of Black people with all of their, you know, implicit bias having asses. You know, like, none of that shit matters if they aren't playing team sports. And so and that's another thing, we got to get out of this mindset of just being excited that a Black person has accomplished something and wait until they have accomplished something within the community. So I don't give a damn if you're a Black lawyer. Let me see where our Black judge, let me see where you've made an impact on the Black community in your role as a judge. Then
right.
I'll get excited.
Right. I mean, it's like with these politicians, like, you know, you and I was having that conversation about that meme that was going around about that county, I think in Georgia, where the whole, like, judicial system or the laws, like, the whoever make the laws and stuff for the land or whoever controls the judicial system with Black women. So then we're still looking at the incarceration rates by race, and it was no different from anywhere else in the country. And so it's like you're saying, what type of impact are you making in these positions? Yes. We got these Black women running for mayors and governors and all these things here. And that's good if they have our best interests at heart and if the community is willing to go to work behind those women. But if not, then you're just doing that but offering another person up to the system that's going to swallow them up. Because I'm not going to say that a person has ill intentions just as a politician, but how can we get the most out of these people?
And that's where we get back to understanding the culture. And I know that's a whole nother topic, but we really need to step up our understanding of culture, because feeding your kid to the police academy expecting that more Black police officers will create a better environment for Black people is kind of like feeding your kid to the NCAA and expecting them to become rich and successful and for that to fix everything that's going wrong in your family. 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work out that way. And the moment they quit playing, they broke and the family still broke. Like, we got to understand culture better. And I mean, there ain't no other way to say it. You know, we play the team game in a selfish manner.
And first generation millionaires will never change the family.
Mm-mm.
No. It's a start, but it's not going to change the family.
Mm-mm. It's too easy to lose $1 million nowadays. I mean, if we're being honest. But even in that, the whole mind state that they go into the league with is broken. the whole mentality that they have is not conducive to creating wealth or creating change. You're talking about black people that chose to go to PWIs over HBCUs to increase their own chances of getting into the league versus trying to have some sort of lasting impact on the black community and the college football world. That in and of itself shows that maybe the thinking might not be where it should be for team games in terms of culture and race.
Well, yeah, that's why I still be looking at the parents sideways too, because the parents has a lot of influence on these kids. The parents should be putting in their head in their heads from the beginning that why it's important for them to attend HBCUs, because the cameras and the dollars gonna follow the talent. And that nobody wanna see a bunch of white boys playing football, baseball, or basketball. So that's what that is, man. But you know, just remind us, you know, Brock Turner, hey man, he might not get what he deserves. He might not. Because a rich white fuck boy who's a rapist as well. And they need to throw the book at him, and they need to castrate his motherfucking ass. So, yeah, man. Besides, go down. You got any parting shots, my brother?
Power to the people.
Power to the people, black America. We need to get off the bullshit. You need to get off the bullshit. You need to stop playing around and stop acting like it's a game out here. Like these white people like really like us, because they don't. So, you know, I mean, you tell yourself what you want to tell yourself, but the truth is out there. So let's get organized. Let's get our stuff together. Let's be able to compete. Until the next time, remember, I have the wellness money coming up. I like y'all.